This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.
Well, hello everybody out there. It is the new year, 2018, and my name is Patricia W. Fisher here for Readers Entertainment Radio. It's been a while. The season, the crazy season has been done with all the holiday shopping and everything. I hope everyone is well that is listening, and if you're not, we have a book for you to read while you are recovering. I am glad today to have Gary Winkle-Smith on, and let me tell you a little bit about him and his book, The Last Midnight. There are multiple five-star reviews for the book on Amazon. One reviewer writes, "It's a first-class piece of courtroom fiction from a new author who has been there." Gary Winkle-Smith is a defense attorney, a native Californian. He has tried over 200 jury trials, including over 100 murder trials and other serious felonies. He is active in the recovery community, serving on various boards of agencies committed to helping those who suffer from substance abuse issues and co-occurring disorders. His stories are created from his relationship with his clients, their lives, and their trials. His second book, Inside the Lie, from what I read on your Twitter feed this morning, is in with your editor and should be out sometime this year, possibly. So is that true, Gary?
Well, that is true. It's not actually with my editor yet. We are waiting to transmit some documents together to get Inside the Lie in his hands. So it shouldn't
Fabulous.
Be very long. Yes.
Okay, good. Well, let's start with, you know, you have a long resume here for being a defense attorney, and I see that you are from California, born and raised?
Yes. I've been here all my
okay.
life.
Okay. So, and I also read on your website that your mom, you spent a lot of time at the courthouse because your mom worked down there. Tell me how that influenced you to want to go into law. Because some people want to go the complete opposite direction. What about that environment made you want to go into it?
Well, my mother was a county supervisor, which in California, the counties are governed by a board of supervisors here, five. And she was one for 20 years. She was the first woman to do an awful lot of stuff. And her office was in the annex to the courthouse. The board of supervisors met there and had their offices there. And so frequently, especially during the summers, I would go and watch the lawyers. And I had pretty much free access to all of the courtrooms and all of the judges' chambers. And it was one of those wonderful things that I got to do. And I often watched lawyers and thought I could do what they were doing. And I found some of it pretty exciting stuff. And
sure.
I watched all kinds of trials, including murder trials. One of which was somewhat famous in this area. And so I wanted to be either a professional baseball player or a lawyer.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, it's always interesting how I've talked to so many people over the years, and it's interesting. They'll always have like a really hugely big goal, like a professional sports person or an actor or what have you. And then there's always the other profession as well. And it seems 9 times out of 10, they always usually – fall to the other profession, but it ends up being the better choice for them anyway.
Well, I'm pretty sure I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I believe that.
Well, I'm sure your clients would agree as well. So, and now you're loving the law as you grow up. You're loving the process and seeing what's going on. Tell me how that translated into writing. Did you always write, or was this something that came later? Because I know there's a lot of writing involved when you're going to law school.
Well, yes, and writing as a lawyer is completely different than writing a novel, which I somewhat painfully discovered when I sent my first manuscript in to Ken Achety with The Story Merchant. I got a paragraph back that said, "This is really working," and then 7 pages of what wasn't working. And a lot of it was because I was writing like a lawyer. I had been writing for years, but I'd never thought I had anything good enough. Until about 3 years ago, something happened and 2 stories started emerging from me. And I spent an equal amount of time on each one, but The Last Midnight finished first. And Inside the Lie kind of picked up from there. So I've been, actually it's been maybe more like 4 years I've been working on both of them.
Okay. Are you part of a writer's group?
No, I am not.
Okay. Okay. So the two stories start to merge. Was there a particular catalyst that really said, made you say, you know what, I really want to write these as a work of fiction?
No, it's something that, and I've heard it said by other writers, is something that had to come out of me. It was, I sat down one day and one story started to emerge. And when I seemed to be losing whatever was going on, the other story would emerge and I'd start writing on it. And it was back and forth for a significant period of time until finally The Last Midnight kind of took over and I finished it first.
Nice. And you know, that's a huge sense of accomplishment to finish a book. I've talked to people over the years who say, well, why would I bother showing it to anyone? I said, you don't realize you're in such a small number of people. There's plenty of people who say they want to write, and there's plenty of people who start, and there's plenty of people who, you know, say they're going to do it, but there's actually smaller and smaller groups of people that get farther and farther along. So to actually finish the book is a huge deal.
Well, I think so, too, and you have to know when you're finished. That's another difficult part is knowing, okay, this story has reached its end.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's an art as well. Absolutely, you're right. So, you know, with your being an attorney, I'm sure that people ask you all the time about, you know, what law shows you watch or movies, and if you do, which ones, and if you don't, I'm guessing it's because you don't want to bring your work home with you.
Well, it's not so much that, because my work is home with me always. I'm not a high-volume practice. I have a very low-volume practice, and I handle serious felonies like murder, and they require that I spend time with my clients and, of course, time understanding and knowing the case, the story of the case. But what I don't like watching is movies where they have not retain the services of someone who knows how a courtroom is supposed to be set up and also the kind of behavior that is allowed in a courtroom. And I understand that it's about entertainment a lot of the time, and we're writers to have to be limited to what you do in a courtroom correctly. It might not be as much fun, but I think it can be. I think that you can create a dynamic that shows what's really allowed in a courtroom and shows proper behavior from lawyers and shows that lawyers doing their proper roles and still tell a really good story, because you've created something that exists that is going to be a trial and it can be really exciting, but do it the way it's supposed to be done. Don't have the lawyers walking up and getting in the face of the witness or standing across the counsel table and pointing their finger in their faces, things that aren't allowed in the courtroom. I don't like that.
Right. Yeah, I was a nurse for many years, and I always get nuts when I see a scene where the bed rails aren't up. And they don't put them up because it blocks the camera view, and I get it, but it just makes me crazy.
Yeah, well, and I you understand me completely. When I
do.
See where they have the parties at the wrong sides of the counsel table, or a prosecutor getting up and literally, you know, coming over and standing by the defendant and pointing his finger at him and doing the things that you just can't do. I don't appreciate that. Now, I don't watch any of the television shows because someone has suggested that, you know, in 30 minutes to an hour, they handle an entire case. And so nothing but lightweight entertainment is taking place. And it means that they do things like the lawyer tells the whole story.
Sure.
I remember Andy Griffith, who everybody loves, myself included, loved, would get up in Matlock and tell the entire story of the case. You know, there was a guy named Petrocelli ages ago who did the same thing. And we lawyers don't get to do that. The story is told through witnesses and documents and so forth. And lawyers have to be the ones who actually introduced the testimony or the documents, but we don't get to tell the story. The story comes through the evidence that we're given. And so I'm like you. I'm upset when I see it being done wrong.
Right. And I think that it does. I mean, I know people realistically know that it's entertainment and they know this, but it does pose an issue. I'm sure that you've seen in your cases, and I've seen when I've worked in the units, it's, well, what do you mean you can't do it this way? You know, and I think
right.
in those very emotional moments, they're hoping for that instant fix. And I'm sure that's something you've had to explain, that that's not what happens.
Well, yes, and sometimes movies are a really big hit, and there's one, and it's from one of my favorite authors, so I'm not going to say anything negative about it, other than the defense lawyer decides that his client's a really bad guy, and he has a personal grudge toward his client, so he ends up setting him up for another murder beef, so the cops will bust him for something because he got away with killing someone else. And it's the defense lawyer doing that. It's so contrary to the basic principles of being a defense lawyer that a lot of people just thought it was such a great book and such a great film. I did not.
Right.
I didn't appreciate that part, although I said the author is one of my favorites. I read everything he writes.
Right. So with The Last Midnight, tell me a little bit about it.
Okay. The Last Midnight is a story about a really great lawyer and his investigator, who is also his best friend. The lawyer is Patrick Moynihan. The investigator is Tommy Krumholtz. And they have been working cases together for several years now. And they understand each other. They both know how to do their job really well. 6 years ago, Patrick's wife was murdered. And they never did find the killer. And it threw him into a tremendous depression and changed his whole world, turned it upside down. He didn't understand what happened or why. And he and Tommy take on the defense of a murder case that becomes somewhat high profile, partly because of the brutality of the murder and partly because the father of the defendant is a very wealthy and very powerful man who has connections with everybody. And he
sure.
is going to try and get his son acquitted by any means necessary. So during the course of the proceedings, he interferes. He becomes a major force in the proceedings, and he's actually, everything he's doing is ending up working against the defense. He thinks otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So some corruption on the part of law enforcement and the legal community is shown, susceptibility
sure.
to the power plays of the wealthy and powerful. And Patrick becomes aware that the man who killed his wife may become part of the case.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And in the interim,
wow.
there's a story, the killer, a spoiled rich kid who's he's old enough to not be called a kid.
Sure.
Has an encounter with a local, rather secretive gangster who steals everything from him. He's been in the drug business and he's stolen his drug money and his drugs and even takes his wife. And
wow.
because she'd been brutalized. So that's the backstory
okay.
going on with the defendant, Martin. And his name is Martin Van Peltzer. His father is Carl. And Carl's unaware of that side of his son, only because he'd been
sure.
blinded by love. That's his weakness. And so we approach a trial with a new district attorney, a woman, who is an exceptionally talented prosecutor who came up from San Diego to Dan Breyer, which is where all of this takes place. And
mm-hmm.
Dan Breyer is a fictional community and county somewhere between Orange County, Los Angeles, Riverside, and San Bernardino. And
okay.
the reason I created it as a fictional area is because I think it's possible, and not intentional, that some people might think that they saw themselves in there or that they saw someone they knew of because my stories come from real people.
Sure.
And the last thing I would want to do is have any reader, much less any specific individual, think that I was writing about them, because I am not.
Yeah, I've talked about that with different authors, how they, you could easily set something in Houston or Dallas or LA or whatever neighborhood. But you have to be absolutely specific, because readers are really brutal if it's wrong. So if you make your own town, even if it's a suburb of whatever, you can make it whatever you want to. And that's kind of the brilliance of it. You can base it on that ice cream store or that gas station or whatever, but it's not called those things. So, yeah, I think you're right, absolutely fair to come up with a fictitious area. That definitely makes things a little smoother, for sure.
Well, I had to. And Scott Turow gave me the idea. He's been writing about a fictional area in the Chicago area for, forever. He's done a lot of wonderful books. He's one of my favorite writers, and his town is fictional.
Yeah. It just absolutely makes it easier, for sure. So when you do watch, and we'll go back to the movie thing a little bit and TV shows, et cetera, or even books. When you do read or see any of these things, and you don't have to tell me any particular author, what do you see that is done really well?
Okay.
Is there any particular movie or show that you've seen that's done really well, even just the casting of the character?
Well, I think oftentimes that's everything. It's like picking of the right jury. You cast your movie well, and then, of course, you've got to have a really great director knows how to help the actors find their place and find their way and find their part in that particular story. So sometimes we have some, really great courtroom drama. And I go back to movies like... well, maybe I shouldn't even be specific, but what I look for in courtroom drama is that the director, first of all, knows how the scene is supposed to be set. And I train the Trial Lawyers College, which is Jerry Spence's Trial Lawyers College, and I have now for, going on 18 years. And we use psychodrama to develop the story so that we can present it in a courtroom. And it's nothing different than what actors do when they're trying to set the scene. And the director needs to make sure that each one of the actors knows their character, knows their role. So, of course, they work through each one of their scenes. We do the same thing. And the difference between those of us who are going into the courtroom, the real live courtroom drama, and the actors, is that we only get one take. So I appreciate it when I see that it's been well done, that whoever has taken over the direction and whoever has taken on the roles, whoever has written the script, the screenplay, the story, whoever has done that has felt it, has lived it, has wanted it to come out real. And so they don't try and fill it full of fancy stuff that's cute stuff that they think will sell, but instead making it real, because one of my favorite poets, Maya Angelou, said, people will remember what you said, and they'll remember what you did, but they will never forget how you made them feel.
Exactly. And the words that any writer does is incredibly powerful for that reason.
Yes. So that is what I would look for in good, legal stories. And a lot of times they come from a cop perspective. Michael Connelly, one of my favorites, he writes Harry Bosch. He has a lawyer involved as well, but it always involves a legal system, and you can feel it and you understand it and you can move with it. And that's what a good story needs to be. It needs to come off as truthful, not some nation of, this looks cool, because truthful does look cool.
Right. So tell me some about Inside the Lie, because that's your second book, and that's something that you're working on. So tell me something about that. Tell me about that.
Okay. Inside the Lie is a story about a young lawyer named Rex McKinley, who also has a private investigator that he grew up with named Eddie Logan. And Eddie is a motorcycle enthusiast, a biker, an all-around tough guy who works only for wrecks. And he has his own life. He was in the Marine Corps. Rex is a local guy from Dan Brier. Unlike Patrick Moynihan, who's from Santa Monica from The Last Midnight,
okay.
Rex actually grew up in Dan Brier and has been a lawyer for about 15 years. He's young. He's talented. He's arrogant. He thinks the world revolves around him. And when he's in a courtroom, he shows off an awful lot. And he takes on the defense of a murder allegation where the brother of a local law enforcement deputy sheriff is murdered. And the man he is defending is the younger brother of the president of a local motorcycle club called Blood Oath. Mm-hmm. And Blood Oath is also unique to Dan Brier. But they are an outlaw motorcycle club, as we would call them, a one percenter organization. They wear a patch, a top and bottom rocker with a logo in the center, like some of the more notorious motorcycle clubs. I have an association with one in particular and have for, going on 35 years. So I know a little bit about motorcycle clubs. And this motorcycle club has a role in protecting Rex because he is lured out by a woman and is beaten badly and set up for some criminal charges as a result of it and has to go through the criminal process himself. And Patrick Moynihan and Tommy Krumholtz come on the scene to defend Rex in that part of the case. And it's
so I was
going to
ask you if there was any crossover, so that's cool.
Yeah, they come in for that purpose and defend Rex. And when his case is resolved, and I won't say how, he still has the trial of Billy West is the client's name. His brother is Doug West, the mighty Doug West. And so because of what happened to Rex and Eddie Logan, who is out looking to find out some information about what really happened with this homicide, this murder scene, he gets shot in the process. And so now Blood Oath, the motorcycle club, has to come in. Well, they don't have to, but they come in and offer security for Rex and for Eddie Logan, whose recovery is very slow because he's been shot through the back and he's hurt badly. A trial ensues, and it's a good trial. It's a trial to a verdict. And so we go through each and every day of trial and until the jury verdict. Lots of good testimony. I've cross-examined a huge number of witnesses in my career. And in all cases, you have witnesses telling various sides of the story. And in probably every trial I've ever been in, people are lying.
Sure.
And sometimes it's... The prosecution side, and sometimes it's the defense side, but usually it's both. And so the jurors are left with, where are we going to find the truth in all of this? And how would we find justice in this case? And I think that's the big question in the trial of Billy West, with Rex and opposing counsel being a very talented prosecutor by the name of a handsome guy who's nothing but success through his entire career, and a captain in the sheriff's department who has been the shining star in the sheriff's department. And his team have won 22 homicide trials in a row, and they don't intend to lose another one. So it's a heated battle, and it's a good battle. It's a good fight, a good war. The brother of the deceased is the one who beat Rex. And he ends up getting a taste of his own medicine by kind of an anonymous gangster, the same guy that was in The Last Midnight, who shows himself only slightly, but no one ever gets to really see him.
Okay.
And so there's some justice from other levels going on in the background. The guy who shot Eddie Logan in the back is captured. And his leader of his organization is also... his his time is rendered shorter than he expected as well. So there's violence, and it's not gory, in your face, throw the blood all over you violence, but it's stuff that people know happens, and sometimes they really don't want to know about other than just reading about it.
Right, and very simply so, I'm sure.
Yes.
So you're layering in these characters for your two books. Are you developing a series going, with either set of attorney investigator groups? Are you going to have two different series that kind of overlap at times? Or are you just going to go with one, or you're just going to keep developing characters out of what comes with the different books?
I think that the latter. I think I'm just going to keep creating stories as they come. However, I'm in the process of also writing, this is a true story. It's going to be called I'm a Boy Scout, which is a line from my client. My client is alive, and his name is Dennis Fletchner. And this story is about the Dennis Fletchner murder trial, where he was prosecuted for killing three people one night. He shot and killed three people in his driveway. And about 6-8 months ago, I was called by some people who produce a show called Fear Thy Neighbor. I was unaware of it. It's apparently an internationally recognized film, and it's I believe produced and or at least distributed by the Discovery Channel. And so we did some filming about Dennis's case, and my experts, some of the other prosecution witnesses, myself, Dennis, we've all been interviewed, and it will become a program that's probably going to be on the international airways at maybe April, which prompted me to write. I already had started a novel about it, but it just wasn't working. So I'm going to write it as the true story. And I have a good deal of the trial transcripts. It was October 4th of 2009 when Dennis shot and killed three people. And it was August of 2011 when the jury found him not guilty on all counts. And so I'm a Boy Scout is what he told one of the deceased the first time the guy threatened him. And when I asked him, why'd you think that? He said, don't you know the Boy Scout motto? The Boy Scout motto is be prepared.
Always be prepared. Right. So I also see we have about 2 minutes left. So I wanted to ask you about the John Lewis King Scholarship Committee you're part of.
Yes.
You received the scholarship in law school. Tell me a little bit about the program.
Well, John Lewis King was a very well-known and very successful personal injury and civil lawyer in San Bernardino, and had a law firm, who died in the middle of a trial in court. So the scholarship was started by lawyers who knew him, loved him, and respected him. One of his sons is a recently retired appellate court justice, a good friend of mine. Two of his sons are lawyers. His wife, Justice King's wife, is still sitting on the bench here in San Bernardino County. So the family's actively involved, deeply entrenched in the local legal community. And I sit on the committee, and each year we give out scholarships to a couple of students in law school. And they're sizable scholarships. And I was asked by one of the members who was retiring to take his place about 15, maybe 20 years ago. And it's a wonderful scholarship opportunity for people, and it's funded by really great people. And the King family is really a great family here in this town.
So giving back, and that's a big, big deal. We all work so hard to get our education and everything else. And, I strongly believe in giving back because somebody helped us up, so we help someone else up, just paying it forward.
There you go, and I believe that's the truth of it. That's what makes us better.
Well, I so appreciate you coming on the show today, Mr. Smith, and we are looking forward to your book if you want, or your second book. Your first book is out now, so if you want to, if you're looking for The Last Midnight, it is on Amazon right now. I believe it is free on Kindle Unlimited. Is that correct?
That is correct. I'd love to have people read it, and give me a review, please, whatever you feel. I'd love to hear about it.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us today. And everybody, stay warm out there, keep reading, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, Patricia.
Absolutely. Thank you.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions. www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.